was closing. Even before it fully shut, I was racing in the other direction, hoping that would buy us a few more seconds. I stormed down the corridor to the landing bay and found Mickey, Dutch, and Gretchen already there, charging up the Condor's back ramp. With the power restored, a force field once again sealed the bay, but the place was still a stunning wreck, much like the one we'd left on the far side of Luna. When Virgil had shut the power off in the station, everything that wasn't tied or bolted down had gotten blasted out into space. I spotted all sorts of things floating out there, including a broadsword, a UNSC strike fighter that had seen better days. Fortunately, I didn't see any bodies spinning around out there, which meant they must have somehow cleared the crew before the power went out. I didn't know if Virgil would have willingly ejected anyone from the place under Veronica's orders, but I was relieved it hadn't come to that. I leaped into the back of the Condor and slapped the button to bring the ramp back up. As the seals were activating, I put my hand out toward Mickey. "Gun, please." He paused for a moment, looking into my face. I took off my helmet and put my hand back out. "Gun, Mickey, or we're not going anywhere." His jaw flexed as he glanced around at each of us in the ship's bay in turn. Dutch, Gretchen, Sadie, Virgil, Romeo, and back to me. Then he reversed the grip on his pistol and dropped it gently into my outstretched hand. "All right," I called up to Veronica, still sitting in the pilot's chair. "Let's get this rocket rolling." As Mickey found a seat in the bay next to Dutch and Gretchen, I strode up to the cockpit. Romeo grabbed me by the arm as I went. "Didn't think you had it in you," he said as he shot a meaningful glance back at Mickey. "I'm a professional," I told him. "I did it for the mission." He raised his eyebrows at that. "Whatever you need to tell yourself." I pulled my arm free. "Screw you, Romeo." He leaned back and smiled. "Now we got the band back together." Veronica wasted no time punching us out of the bay, making sure that no one inside could stop us from escaping. She weaved us through the debris field from the bay's blowout and headed for the open stars beyond. As we did, a familiar voice came at us over the ship's comm.
"Spartan Buck, do you copy? This is Chief of Staff June."
Still alive, thankfully.
"Hi, Chief. What can we do for you, sir?"
"I'm sorry I was unavailable during your recent visit. It seems a lack of air in my quarters rendered me unconscious."
He sounded a little hoarse, but I'd been legitimately worried that he was dead. It felt good to hear him talk.
"That sounds like something you should really get fixed."
"It appears the station's AI was the source of that issue," he said, "and I've been informed that it's since been resolved. Tell me, would you happen to have one of my prisoners aboard your craft?"
I'm sure I don't know what you could be referring to, sir," I said.
"I'm sure you don't. Because if you did take a prisoner from my station without my permission, that would be worthy of a court-martial, no matter how much goodwill you might otherwise have earned."
"I can't imagine what would inspire me to an act of such blatant stupidity, sir."
I grimaced at the others, who cringed in silence, and gave them a see-what-you-got-me-into-now look.
"Me neither," said June. "I suppose you didn't have anything to do with resolving the AI problem I was having, either."
"If I did, sir, I might be compelled to point out that the AI problem you're referencing was connected to a larger network of even greater threats that could be quickly approaching your current location, and that it'd be extremely wise to quit wasting time talking with me and get out of the system before those threats come knocking on your door with a gigantic weapon."
"We're already in the middle of making preparations," June said. "I'm going to get back to that right now. I just wanted to make sure you left with everything you came for." He paused.
"Buck, I understand the desperate times call for desperate measures. Just know that he's your responsibility now. Thanks for your service today. I won't forget it."
"Good luck out there," I said to him.
"Same to you, Buck. Same to you."
As Veronica gunned us toward the edge of the system, I slipped into the weapons station and accessed the nav display to set a slipspace course for our next destination. What's the name of this hidden front paradise of yours? I asked Veronica. The natives call it the hole in the wall. You gotta be kidding me. She punched the coordinates into the navigational system for me. It's named after a famous outlaw hideout from the American frontier days. I snickered. The joke's for this name. How do you stop them from, erupting? The people there take it very seriously, she said. They identify with that kind of culture, and we need their help. Do not mock them. Is that a direct order? Would it help if it were? Probably not. Give it a shot, she said. Go back and give your friends a proper hello. Once I get us into slipspace, I'll come back so I can brief everyone. I wasn't looking forward to that. I sighed, then unbuckled myself from my seat and went back to the bay. Dutch and Gretchen were there, and they'd already taken off their helmets. I hung mine on a rack next to theirs. Before I was even done, Dutch stood up and grabbed me in a massive bear hug. He whooped with joy as he swung me around, and it was all I could do not to bash my head on the ship's ceiling. "Whoa there, pal," I said to him as he set me down. "Good to see you, too." He put me on my feet and grinned at me. "Damn it, Buck, I can't believe it's you. And to run into you like that? Hooey!" Gretchen stood up next to him and cleared her throat. Dutch's eyes went wide, and he spun around to usher her toward me. "You remember my wife, Gretchen?" "We've met," she said as she offered her hand to me. I shook it. "Never seen you in combat gear before, though." Gretchen had been an ODST at one point, too, but she'd stepped on a mine and been discharged from the service before I'd even met Dutch. "It suits you." "I'm active duty again," she said with a smile. "The whole way." The docs in the Spartan 4 program set me up with the best prosthetic an unlimited military budget can buy. Works so well in the armor that you can't tell the difference at all. I looked to both her and Dutch. "So that's what brought you out of retirement." Dutch gave me a game shrug. "Once they offered to make her a Spartan, you think I was going to let her leave me behind?" "What I don't get," Romeo said, "is why you two didn't tell somebody. This is pretty big. We should have known about it." Gretchen blushed a little at that. "Well, there was a chance that the prosthetic wouldn't quite take. You know how tight they locked down communications from the training station. We were going to notify you as soon as we got through and were handed our deployment orders. That's when everything would have been official. But now we're here." "Yeah," Dutch said, suddenly a lot grimmer. "What in the world happened back there, Gunny? What was all that business with Leonidas?" I felt the telltale twinge in my stomach that told me we'd just entered slipspace. "It's a long story, and I'll get to it in a second, but there's one thing I want to know first." I turned toward the cockpit. "Veronica, why didn't you tell me Dutch and Gretchen were Spartans now?" She emerged from the front of the ship and gave Dutch and Gretchen a friendly nod. "Good to see you. I'd heard that you were training and considered the possibility of running into you. But I didn't want to get you involved if I could help it." Dutch blew out a long sigh and rubbed his hand over his mostly bald scalp. "What do you mean by involved?" He looked straight at me, as if I had all the answers. "Exactly what did we sign up for here, Gunny?" Veronica stepped forward and laid it all out for them. What had happened on Genesis, how Cortana was threatening the whole galaxy, and why we needed Mickey to help us find a way to hide from her if we could. With every word she spoke, Mickey's face grew darker, and believe me, she noticed. By the time she was done, the two of them stood there staring daggers at each other. Dutch and Gretchen gaped at Veronica and me as if they couldn't believe what an atrocious mess they'd somehow gotten tangled up in. Meanwhile, Sadie sat next to where Virgil was floating and patted his flank in a way that seemed reassuring. Romeo just sat in a corner and watched it all, clearly entertained. More than once, he covered his mouth so no one could see him laughing, but he wasn't fooling anyone. We were all just too busy to pay any attention to him. "Buck?" Mickey stared at me, his eyes wide and troubled. "Are you kidding me? You want me to work as a liaison between the UNSC and the front?" "Yes," I told him flatly. "What did you think? That we just wanted you as another gun?
When you broke me out of prison, I just assumed.
I laughed at him.
Are you serious? I wouldn't trust you to bake me a batch of cookies. You're here because you speak traitor, and because of that, those idiots in the front might actually listen to you. No more and no less.
Mickey's face looked as if I'd told him he had only a week left to live.
You have to be joking.
I've been inside a high-security military prison for 3 years. I come out of there, and they're going to think you've turned me against them, that you've got some kind of leverage to make me betray them.
I could see why they'd think that, I said sarcastically. It would seem to fit the pattern.
They won't talk to me, he said. They'll kill me, Buck.
You're with us now, Mickey, Gretchen said. We won't let them.
Dutch gave her a supportive squeeze for that.
And how are you going to stop them? Mickey asked her. Seriously, you call this your revamped Alpha 9? We have 2 fully trained and outfitted Spartans here.
He waved at Romeo and me.
I don't have any armor or weapons, and Dutch and Gretchen haven't even completed training. They're not ready for this.
Dutch huffed at him, offended. Hey, even if we're not quite as used to these new frames as you long-timers, we're still stronger and faster than anyone the front has on their side.
You, my friend, are a fool, Mickey said with a pitying shake of his head. Even if you and Gretchen were up to speed already, how many of us are there?
We have 8 in this bird, including a young lady with no combat training and her pet alien, who would deflate like a balloon if a bullet even nicked him.
Hey, Sadie said.
Virgil leaned closer to her, but kept his eyes focused on Mickey as he purred in protest.
Meanwhile, the front has thousands of soldiers, all of whom are willing to die for their cause. You're not going to be able to protect me, or any of us against that. Not with this half-baked version of Alpha 9, at least.
We're not going in to fight them, Veronica said, irritated. This is a diplomatic mission.
I'm sure the front will see it like that.
You tell me the UNSC is now struggling against something it literally created, and they send a bunch of Spartans to figure out why this rogue AI, what did you call her, Cortana? Why she and her pals haven't raced over to stomp out a bunch of freedom fighters as well. That it?
That's it exactly.
Then get ready, because they're going to shoot us down the moment we enter the planet's atmosphere. Wherever it is we're going, they don't screw around with UNSC ships encroaching on their territory. They'll see this as an act of war, and they'll respond accordingly. That's exactly why the front exists, because the UNSC doesn't respect people's property and just does whatever it wants.
But Mickey, Gretchen said, this is why they're bringing you. They don't need you to fight for the UNSC. They just need you to get the front to listen long enough so that they don't try to take us down straight away.
Mickey softened a bit at the sound of Gretchen's voice. She'd never worked with him, of course, and neither she nor Dutch had been there on the day he'd betrayed Romeo and me. She didn't have any of our baggage, and I wondered if we could use that to our advantage.
She's right, I said, and maybe you can help us talk them into sharing whatever they have that's keeping them hidden from the Guardians.
Mickey's eyes grew wide, and his torrent of venom continued.
Are you out of your mind? If the universe truly handed the front an edge like this, you expect them to just share it with the UNSC? For the so-called good of humanity?
Lord help us, Dutch said. If we can't figure out a way to come together against a threat like this, what good are we at all?
First of all, Mickey said, this AI is not just a threat, Dutch. She was made by the UNSC. She's their problem to deal with.
Second, the front already knows you're full of it. That's the exact same line the UNSC sold them when the Covenant came along. Fall in line and help us out, or the aliens will kill us all.
And once it was over, what happened? Did we all wind up holding hands and singing campfire songs? Or did the UNSC go right back to hounding innocent people out of their homes? To telling people on faraway planets how they were supposed to live their lives?
So you all need to be honest with me and yourselves. Do you really think you'll be able to fool them again? That they're going to buy any of this?
The entire bay fell quiet,
Mickey was steaming mad and on a roll, and it seemed no one had a good rebuttal that he wasn't going to beat down. Until Romeo started laughing out loud. The rest of us turned to stare at him. When he saw the looks of disgust on our faces, that only got him going louder. Fat tears rolled down his cheeks, and he was audibly wheezing from whatever stupid joke was running through his head that only he seemed to understand. "What?" Mickey eventually demanded. "What's so funny?"
"You are. You're truly out of your goddamn mind," Romeo said as he wiped his cheeks dry. "You really think the front is going to be able to just ride this out? They're already on the ropes. They've lost I don't know how many colonies. As far as the galaxy is concerned, there is no more front."
Mickey looked stricken. I thought he might lunge at Romeo and try to kill him then and there.
"What?"
"As far as we know, the only human population that's not either on their knees or knocked flat is this one place we're headed to. And you're worried about how the UNSC is going to treat the front when this is all over? If it wasn't for the UNSC, there wouldn't even be a front to be talking about right now. The Covenant would have rolled over them in a single year and not even batted an eye. And if Cortana's threat is even half true, she isn't like the Covenant at all. She's got access to technology they never even dreamed of. The front won't be able to hide from her forever. Eventually, she's going to find them and wipe their little rebellion off the face of the galaxy. They need help, even if they don't know it yet. Every word you've used in defending them has only gotten you one step closer to signing their death warrant."
"Hey," Mickey started.
"I didn't..." Romeo cut him off with a wave of his hand. "I know you've been out of circulation for a while, so let me give it to you straight. As a people, I'm talking about humanity, not one of your little factions. We've never been this far down. So you really need to take a few minutes to find yourself some perspective. Otherwise, you're going to risk getting all of us killed by those cowboys out there, and you better believe I won't let that happen." By that time, no one, not even Romeo, was laughing.
"You think this is about me?" Mickey said.
"Huh. Even if I go along with this insane scheme of yours, how are you going to convince the front you're telling the truth? I don't have that much cred with them. No one does. It doesn't matter what we offer them or who does the offering. There's no way they'll ever agree to this." He sat down on a chair and slumped back in disgusted resignation.
"Trust me. You'll see."
"Like you got a choice," Romeo said, blowing out a sigh. "Like any of us got a choice."
"Right," said Gretchen.
"It's either that or roll over for Cortana." "Which is not an option," I said. "Agreed?" I waited for everyone to nod for me. Mickey held out to the last.
"Good," I said.
"Now that that's settled, let's talk about how we're going to do this." I handed the floor over to Veronica, mostly because she was the boss and this was where my need to know had expired. From here on out, I'd be learning along with everyone else.
"Okay. We're heading to Cassidy 3. It's a typical blue-green world that was pretty far off the beaten path of human-occupied space. UEG pioneer groups had initially scouted it out as a potential colony. But they'd abandoned it early on because of travel costs associated with the old slipspace drives. Now it's not so far out of the way, but it's still next to impossible to find unless you're actively looking for it. The last few probes that Oni sent out there came back with some interesting finds. There's plenty of evidence of Forerunner technology on the surface, but only one human settlement that we know of. It's called the Hole in the Wall."
"Yes, that's the name. It was founded 50 years ago by a bunch of outlaws, pirates mostly, who wanted to build a secure hideout. Once they were set up, they fell in with some rebels who were on the run as well. And when the insurrection started to wane because of the Covenant War, a large portion of the United Rebel Front was folded into this group. The place is undetectable by all of our conventional sensors, which is one of the reasons it's remained off the grid. As far as we can tell, it's able to foil not only human but also Covenant technology. Even some of the Forerunner-based advances we've made to deep space surveying in the past few years are blind to this world's existence. It's the real deal. Dutch let out a low whistle, impressed. We have no idea how or why this works, Veronica continued. We just know that it does. Romeo put up his hand, and Veronica nodded at him. It was the kind of thing I might have bit off his head for, hiding his sarcasm behind a facade of false respect. But she took it in stride, as if she not only commanded the respect, but had earned it. If it's so undetectable, how did Oni find it? That's actually not a stupid question, I said, maybe more surprised than I should have been. Romeo flashed me a smug little smile. A survey team stumbled upon it after a slipspace drive failure during a routine inspection. It was actually a complete accident. During the war, we hid a number of things in and around the site, in part because we knew they'd be safe there, but also to keep tabs on the rebels there. But we didn't seriously leverage it for fear of drawing the Covenant. When the Covenant finally discovered Earth, one of our backup plans, of literally hundreds, would have moved a large number of UNSC assets to Cassidy 3. But fortunately, we never reached that point. Once the war ended, Oni decided to keep the location of the whole classified and top secret. We left the existing population alone because there was no reason for us to be there. We've known about them for a while and haven't lifted a finger, she said, clearly making sure that Mickey heard this part. There's absolutely no way they stayed put after their cover was blown, Mickey said. They wouldn't have just sat there and waited for Oni to send in a warship to bomb the hell out of them from orbit. The front's leadership never knew they'd been compromised by Oni, Veronica said. We didn't have any real presence there. When we hid things on Cassidy 3, we did it so far away from the settlement they had no clue. And believe it or not, we didn't have any plans for the hole at all. It would only have been a matter of time, Mickey said. That time is now, I told him. He glared at me, but I didn't really care. We're not here to expose the colony, Veronica said, ignoring the barbs. But we need to know how they managed to keep hidden all these years. Otherwise, when they are finally exposed, and eventually they will be, we'll have no way of recovering the technology. Sadie held up her hand without any of the attitude that Romeo had shown. Then why didn't we simply spend the last few decades researching this? She asked once Veronica acknowledged her. Such a find would have more value than most of the other projects the UNSC was working on. A world that couldn't be detected by any known survey technology? It would have made us invincible during the war. We had other priorities, Sadie, Veronica said. I wish it was more complicated than that, but it's true. Before the close of the war, we were fighting for our lives. Research happened sporadically, but all our resources were pressed toward stopping the Covenant from erasing human existence. After it was finished, there were thousands of fires that needed to be put out. Colonies on the brink of habitability collapse needed to be recovered. Refugee populations unlike anything we've ever seen before. And that didn't count the ongoing conflicts that didn't stop at the end of the war. Active rebels causing problems on surviving colonies. Ex-Covenant factions raiding places for whatever spoils remained. Researching a backwater world with some weird Forerunner anomaly didn't top the list. Though I agree, it would have come in very handy right about now. To be perfectly honest, the people on Cassidy 3 never showed that much curiosity about the way their special little trick works. They're largely indifferent to the Forerunner technology on their surface and the benefits it might yield. As far as they're concerned, it is what it is. They lucked out, and messing with it might cause it to stop working. So they just leave it alone. But that's not going to fly anymore, Mickey said, his voice soaked with disdain. It's not enough for Oni to let the people of Cassidy 3 live in peace. They have to figure out how they've managed that peace, and then mass-produce it for their own ends. Are you really against us figuring out how to protect humanity from Cortana? I asked. Humanity? You mean the UNSC? Cortana already has them against the wall. That's the whole reason we're having this conversation. What are you getting at, Mickey? Just pointing out that we're already past the point of saving everyone from this AI situation. If what you guys have said is true, it's pretty clear. This isn't a new war. The war is already over. Cortana won. What we're talking about now is starting a revolution.
Is that such a bad thing?
Mickey finally smiled. Actually, no. When it comes to running an insurgency, consulting with the front makes tons of sense.
Chapter 12.
For the record, the slipspace drives on most Condors might seem cheap compared to the ones on capital ships, but they're pretty fancy. The first few Condors were called Super Pelicans because they vaguely resembled the widely known UNSC dropship, but they had a larger airframe and could punch a hole into slipspace. Dropships being able to travel at superluminal speeds was kind of a new thing for the UNSC. Part of an across-the-board update utilizing reverse-engineered tech from the Forerunners. The trips on them can seem to take forever, although not nearly as long as it would to move through real space at far less than the speed of light. In the early days of the war, I spent weeks zipping through slipspace at a comparatively slow pace, waiting to get to a destination an otherwise impossible distance away. Trips took weeks, and months even. Now it was down to hours. Most Condors, though, don't have a Hurrigok on board. I can't speak for engineers other than Virgil, but he gets bored rather easily. Maybe it's because whatever constitutes his brain moves so fast that he doesn't think of us as stunning conversationalists. In fact, his kind communicate a lot faster and more efficiently than anyone could ever manage verbally. He takes out that boredom on the things around him, working selflessly and constantly to help improve the machines at hand. Well, tentacle. Case in point. By the time he was done tuning up our slipspace drive, our Condor was faster than anything I'd ever flown. When Virgil tried to explain what he'd done, I held up one hand and stopped him right there. Not just because I wouldn't understand half the terms about to spill out of his translator, but because I needed him to work some upgrades into the Mjolnir armor the Spartans were wearing. This is why we'd brought him along. No human could understand and work with technology as quickly and as well as a Hurrigok. They'd literally been created to do just that. Despite all this, we had some downtime on the trip to Cassidy 3. After the briefing, I decided I'd had enough togetherness for a while, and I returned to the weapons station to get away from everyone. It didn't take long for Veronica to join me by slipping into the pilot seat, which I didn't mind at all. She was the only other person I wanted to see. "You all right?" she asked. "I've had better days." "I know." She reached up and back to put a hand on my boot. "Thank you." "What would you want to thank me for? I haven't exactly been a shining example of leadership." "You're doing fine." "I don't know. I honestly can't look at Mickey without wanting to strangle him. I already have a hard enough time with Romeo. I think Captain O'Day would have called that a distinct lack of forethought and restraint. Of course, I didn't go through with it, so perhaps there's something to that restraint thing after all. Nobody expects you to be perfect." "I do." That got a smile out of her that I could see in her reflection in the canopy's glass. "That's one of the things I love about you, Buck. But please don't beat yourself up. Every person on this ship has, from time to time, screwed things up worse than you." "Not our Hurrigok, that's for sure." "And you really think Sadie's that bad?" I said with a half smile. "She always seemed like a decent kid to me." "You know exactly what I mean. You're a great Spartan, Buck, and an amazing leader. It's good to see you back in that seat." "I'm not planning on getting used to it," I told her. "Locke does a great job with Osiris. I've learned a ton of things working with him." "I'm sure he's learned a lot from you, too." "I did teach him about the dangers of tequila." She craned her neck around to give me a doubtful yet playful look. "You're a good friend." We let a long moment of silence pass between us. With everything weighing down our minds, it felt good to sit there and be with her for a bit. I missed that more than I could possibly say.
What about us? I finally asked. I'm not even sure I meant for the words to escape my mouth.
What do you mean?
You know exactly what I mean. A spook as good as you? You know what I'm going to think before I think it.
That I do.
She fell silent and stared ahead into the nothingness of slipspace beyond the Condor's viewport.
What about us?
She said at last.
That's been the big question for a while now.
Well, I had this idea that maybe someday we'd retire and settle down together. But the way everything's gone sideways again, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Life suddenly looks a whole lot shorter. Planning beyond tomorrow gets a lot harder.
I figured I'd wind up driving a long-haul truck. Veronica chuckled.
You would be a lousy trucker. I've seen you drive.
There's a certain level of aggressiveness required when it comes to handling heavily armed vehicles in the middle of a war zone.
You really did a number on that scorpion back on New Mombasa.
Hey, I'll have you know, we didn't suffer a single casualty that entire mission.
Oh, she said. Is that your standard for a successful mission? Getting out of it without losing anyone?
The thought sobered me up a bit. Is that not Oni enough for you?
No, she said. It's not Oni enough. Not by a long shot. It is, however, the right answer. Honestly, Buck, that's why it's a fairly simple choice, picking you to lead these high-risk missions. I know they wear on you, and I know you're worried that one day it'll be too high a risk and you won't come back. But even so, you recognize things that some other leaders don't, like the fact that getting your people back in one piece is part of getting the job done.
And here I thought it was my genius-level tactical planning sense you were after. That or my roguish good looks.
That's a very Buck answer. But really, it's the way you lead the people you work with. They're not expendable to you. You treat them like family. That's the kind of leader people respect. One they can trust. And if they can manage that, they can concentrate on getting the job done.
I frowned. I haven't always been so lucky. I've lost a lot of people over the years. But it was never for a lack of trying to bring them home safe. Everyone who's ever worked with you knows that. How about you?
I know that better than anyone.
I meant about our future. She gave me a funny look in the canopy's reflection.
Wait, are you talking about getting married?
I winced at that. We'd brought it up enough times, but always walked our way back from it. With the kind of lives we had, marriage didn't make a whole lot of sense. It wasn't like we were ever going to wind up with a house full of kids or shoot roots in a suburban neighborhood somewhere.
And if not, what was the point? Please tell me you're not afraid of getting married to me, Buck. Are you?
What?
No.
Afraid?
She shook her head. What's stopping us, then?
We've been kind of busy up until now.
And we can see now that's never going to end.
I shrugged. The galaxy keeps throwing threats of one kind or another at us, and we keep responding. That's what we do.
The point is... Oh, hell, never mind. You know what the point is.
I allowed myself a faint smile. That I do.
Then why wait any longer, Buck?
If the break we were hoping for is never going to come, then why don't you just marry me already? That, I admit, caught me by surprise. I sat there in silence and looked straight ahead, as if maybe I'd misheard her and was trying to puzzle out what she'd actually said.
Eddie Buck, finally silent,
she asked after a long moment. She turned around in her seat to get a good look at me.
See, this is the crux of the matter. You're brave enough to handle anything, but the idea of spending the rest of your life with me absolutely terrifies you.
I don't think terrifies is the right word.
What would it be, then?
I looked into her eyes. I'm not afraid of spending the rest of my life with you, Veronica.
I'm afraid I won't.
I mean, I cut myself off and started over. We both have jobs with low life expectancies. Most people in our line of work don't retire.
They get killed. Then they get a funeral, and that's it. Doesn't that make it hard for you, too? Or is it just me? That's my point, Buck. We might die. Would you rather die married or not? Hey, I thought we had an understanding about this. Times change, Buck. We change with them, whether we like it or not. She turned back to gaze out at the stars again. Look, Veronica, now's not the time for this conversation. I've said that myself, and you're absolutely right. That's not quite where I was going, but you were going to get there. I just saved us both a lot of time. Fair enough. I reached down and tucked her hair behind her ear. She settled back into my hand. We stayed that way for a long time. I knew she was right. Even if one of us ended up dying out here in the fight, it's not as though the other would be immune to that pain because we weren't hitched. What was stopping me from taking that final step? When we neared Cassidy 3, Veronica leaned forward and brought the ship out of slipspace. She'd taken us in nice and close, and we entered real space in orbit around the planet, but a safe distance away from the hole in the wall. The view of the big blue-green orb blocked out just about everything in the sky, but for it and its three decent-sized moons. The planet and its atmosphere looked pristine, like pre-industrial Earth. There was only one colony, and the people who lived there hadn't done much to spoil the place. The clouds that swirled around it were as white and clean as fresh snow. Once she'd hung the Condor in orbit on the far side of the planet, Veronica walked into the rear bay to brief the crew before we made our approach. "All right, Alpha 9," she said. "Here's what's going to happen. Once we've got clearance, I'm going to set down outside the settlement, and Mickey, Romeo, Dutch, Buck, and I are going to go in on foot and have a chat with the locals." "What about Gretchen?" Dutch asked. "She's a combat-trained pilot, and I need someone back here to fly this bird, especially if we need an assist. Also, I don't want it to appear like we're spoiling for a fight." "Yet you're going to take in three Spartans in full armor?" Gretchen said. "Better than taking in more," Veronica said, "and if this op goes anything like the last few, then having a skilled pilot ready to launch this bird at the drop of a hat could be the difference between us living or dying." "And me? I guess I'm just out of luck," Mickey said. "Or are you hiding a spare suit of armor somewhere?" "If she was, I don't think she'd be handing it over to you," I said as I slipped into the bay. Glad to see the foundation of trust on which we're trying to rebuild our relationship is standing strong. I looked Mickey dead in the eye. "Maybe I wasn't clear with you before. There is no trust here. What we have is a mutual need for each other, and that's about it." I was being sarcastic. "Is that another word for asshole?" "You know what?" he said, crossing his arms. "It's probably better that I don't have any armor here. They're going to see you guys and think you're all cowards, hiding behind your suits. You'll be walking targets to them. We're going to be at your mercy going into this place, which is filled with hundreds, if not thousands, of well-armed insurgents. At the very least, I'd like to be in my work clothes." Mickey gawked at me as if I were the stupidest person he'd ever met. "You really think that's going to do you any good?" "It's worked out well for me so far." "You're going to have me take you into a colony full of, as you rightfully pointed out, thousands of well-armed insurgents. If things go wrong, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? You don't think that many people can bring you down?" "That's one thing our drill instructors did their best to beat out of us every day of Spartan training. The idea that we were unstoppable." Mickey was baiting me. I wasn't about to give in. "You're my consultant here on traitor-based psychology, Mickey," I told him. "What would you suggest we do? Other than turn around and go home? I'd send in as little in the way of armament as you can. You show up armed to the teeth and standing there like walking tanks, they're going to want to start shooting you. You walk in there like normal people. That shows them you're more interested in talking than fighting. And if they're interested in shooting normal people, then what?" Mickey gave me a sad shake of his head. "Look at us, Buck. We're never going to pass for normal people.
We're 7 feet tall and built like brick houses. The only people on board who look anything like regular folks are Veronica and Sadie. No offense there, Virgil. The rest of us are freaks. I'm not sending in Sadie, Veronica said. She's a civilian. She works for the UNSC as Virgil's handler. She's not trained for this kind of op, and I'm not going to risk it. I'm not sending in Virgil either. Their job was to help us get you out of prison, I told Mickey. They did that. So why didn't you drop them off someplace safe instead of dragging them into this mess? Mickey asked. I considered that, Veronica said. But there are contingencies at play. First, our timeline for this op doesn't have a lot of latitude for dropping people off. Where would we even do that, given the current situation? Second, there's a good chance that whatever we're looking for on Cassidy 3 involves Forerunner technology. We'll need Virgil to help us figure that out, and he and Sadie come as a team. So we are going to drag Virgil and Sadie into this. Mickey gave Veronica a sarcastic clap that made me want to wind his fingers together until they snapped. Not until we determine that it's safe for them, Veronica said. They're going to stay here in the Condor until then. She turned toward the rest of the team. Boys, get yourselves ready. We'll be making planetfall in under an hour. You're making a big mistake, Mickey said. You stomp in like a bunch of conquerors, and you're going to get us all shot. Veronica lanced him with a withering look. Well, you'll be the one right out in front. So maybe you want to start thinking about how you can keep that from happening. Leave the weapons in the ship. Leave everyone in armor here, too. Just you, me, and Sadie? Not a chance. I let out a deep sigh. He has a point, I said, surprising everyone in the ship, including myself. Veronica stared at me as if I'd been screwing on my helmet too tight. You really want to send in just the three of us? With him? Of course not. But he's right about how it's going to look. Romeo Dutch and I can't exactly get out of our armor on this bird, so that's a non-starter. But we can go in with fewer guns. Just sidearms, for instance. Holstered. You really think that's going to make a difference? I pitched the question to Mickey. What do you think? I don't know for sure, he said, which was maybe the first honest-sounding thing he'd offered up. If it was me, I'd go in even lighter. But yeah, leaving the long guns at home would be a decent start. All right, I said to Romeo and Dutch. Leave the rifles here. If we need some serious firepower, we'll call in Gretchen anyhow. So they can shoot her down too? Dutch asked. Relax, Dutch. I'll be fine. I was once a transport chief, you know. I knew the skill set would come in handy someday, Gretchen said wryly. That job didn't come with guns and Spartans, though, said Dutch. She flashed him a smile. That's right. This is much more fun. Chapter 13 We exited slipspace close enough to Cassidy 3 that I'm sure we set off every long-range alert system the rebels had in place. Veronica got on the open comm system right away and started hailing the people on the ground. Hole-in-the-wall command, this is Captain Veronica Dare of the UNSC. Here on a diplomatic mission. Please respond. She repeated herself a few times as we neared, cruising on down through the atmosphere. Closer up, Cassidy 3 seemed even more beautiful. It had one large continent in the middle, surrounded by concentric rings of islands that formed long and fertile archipelagos. The mainland was cut in half by a gigantic mountain range that left a vast jungle on one side of it and a sprawling desert on the other. Just the kind of planet you could spend a lifetime exploring, if you were so inclined. Most planets weren't quite so pleasant. You wanted to get off them as soon as physically possible. Trust me, I've been on them. We came in at a shallow angle toward the hole in the wall, which sat parked on the high plains just on the desert side of the mountains. High and dry, but not desiccated, it gathered on the edge of a large lake. Sunlight bouncing off the desert ridgelines below transformed them into a glowing red, somehow simultaneously beautiful and haunting. I couldn't remember seeing anything like this world in my decades of service, and I was starting to understand why it was so special. No one responded to our hails, so Veronica took us on another orbit around the planet. We wanted to give the front lots of time to see us and respond with something other than artillery. The last thing we needed to do was have some trigger-happy gun jockey try to knock us out of the sky. The Condor was a sharp little vessel, but we didn't want to test her resiliency against incoming fire unless absolutely necessary. We swung around the dark side of the planet, and I didn't see a single artificial light anywhere on the surface. In one spot, a line of active volcanoes glowed red hot, visible even from dozens of clicks up. But nothing else. For the most part, this was an empty, raw, and unspoiled world. When we came around to the daylight side again, Veronica's hails were finally answered. UNSC Foxtrot 111, this is Cassidy Ground Control. Please state the nature of your mission. This is Captain Veronica Dare. Request that we switch to a secure channel. Once they got through all their authorization and spycraft junk, the voice on the other end of the line spoke again. UNSC Foxtrot 111, I have Mayor Juanita Wells on the line. She'd like to have a word with you. Hello, Mayor Wells. This is Captain Veronica Dare of the UNSC. We are in a single ship and we are on a peaceful mission. I certainly hope so, a woman's skeptical voice responded. Have you already heard the news about the AI named Cortana? We certainly have, Mayor Wells said. We're not entirely cut off from the rest of the galaxy, and I'm not surprised that this has brought you knocking on our door. The good news is that Cortana doesn't seem to have located us so far. The bad news is that you've managed it instead. I understand how you feel, Veronica said. I'd like to discuss this matter with you. The UNSC left us alone for decades. Now you want to come directly into our city? We're in a bit of a bind, as you might imagine. From your point of view, I'm sure that's true, but not from ours. Veronica muted the comm. This is pretty much the kind of interference I was expecting. Mickey, you're up. She waved him forward to lean over her shoulder in the cockpit. She gestured toward the comm and unmuted it. Mickey stared at the console as if it were an angry snake that would bite him if he made a wrong move. Veronica pointed right at it, and he gave her a nervous nod and spoke. Hello, Cassidy 3. This is Michael Crespo. No response came from the other end. Hello, Cassidy 3. This is Michael Crespo. Please come in. A long moment later, Mayor Wells spoke up. Is that Spartan, Michael Crespo? I don't think it would be fair to even call me a Spartan anymore, ma'am. But yes, I'm one and the same. You're supposed to be imprisoned. Word was that you might even have been killed. Rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. Mickey forced a laugh. My former colleagues arranged for my release and brought me along on this excursion to help establish some credit with you. That's quite a stunt, Wells said, and it certainly got my attention. It's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Crespo. I'm glad to hear you feel that way. It also deeply saddens me. Mickey shot me a confused glance and then spoke into the comm again. And why would that be? You're an honest-to-God hero among the front, and it pains me that you're going to be collateral damage when we're forced to shoot your colleague's vessel from the sky. I checked the Condor's motion sensors for any incoming blips, but I didn't see anything. Not yet, at least. I gave Mickey a swift shake of my head. Of course, maybe we wouldn't see anything until it was too late. I wasn't sure how Cassidy 3's masking technology worked. If it was theoretically enough to cover and hide an entire planet, or at least the people living on it, would it also do the same to ships traveling across it, or missiles being fired from it? Or did the technology affect the entire system? If Veronica hadn't had the coordinates for the place, we never would have found it. I realized that I didn't know much at all about this thing we were looking for, not when it really came down to it. It was probably better that way. I was grateful Veronica had to worry about it rather than me, and that we'd brought Virgil along to help figure it all out, assuming we didn't get shot down. Wait, Mickey said into the comm. We're not here to hurt anyone. They just want to talk with you. What's the harm in that? We've seen how the UNSC talks when we have something they want. Believe me, no one understands that more than me. But this isn't like that. Think about it. If the UNSC wanted to storm in and just take whatever it is that's working for you here, they could have done that years ago, right? Ever since the end of the Covenant War. Mickey waited for an answer, but Wells didn't breathe a word. They didn't, he finally said, responding to his own question. They left you alone. Don't you think you should take that into consideration? They were just too scared to take us on, Mr. Crespo, Mayor Wells said. They're really cowards when it comes down to it. Mickey actually snorted at that, and then caught himself, clearly afraid he might insult the mayor. There's a lot of things you can say about the UNSC, but I can tell you, they're not cowards. That's especially true of the Spartans they sent me here with. If they were afraid of you, they'd have sent in an entire fleet rather than a single condor. This is strictly a diplomatic mission. How am I sure they don't have a gun to your head right now? If they did, I'd mention it. The only one who's threatening to kill me right now is you. Touché. Now listen, I don't agree with the UEG on much. I went to prison for defying them. But this isn't about the UNSC or the front. It's not about who's right and who's wrong. It's about the freedom of humanity. Every single human being. And that's something the front has always stood for. You make a pretty speech, Mr. Crespo. But that isn't going to change my mind about the UEG. I'm not asking for that. I haven't changed my mind about them either. All I'm asking is that you let us land and that you join us in an open and honest conversation about what we can do to help keep humanity out from under the heels of this insane AI. That's all. Shooting you down seems like a much simpler solution. Do you really think this is going to stop here if we're dead? You shoot us down and the UNSC will send a bigger ship and more people. You shoot them down and they'll come here with a heavily weaponized capital ship and nuke you from orbit. You are not making this sound like a peaceful mission, Mr. Crespo. Hey, I don't trust these people any more than you do. But this isn't about trust. It's about fighting back. And the front knows more about how to do that than anyone else. Mickey let that lie there for a moment, and Veronica muted the comm. Nice work, I said to him. You sound like a true believer. I'm not fooling anyone, Buck. That's exactly why I joined the front, to stop this kind of thing from happening. It's why I joined the UNSC in the first place, too. To keep the Covenant from bringing our way of life to an end. This is why it always galls me that you think of me as a traitor. I never gave up any of my beliefs. I stuck to my principles. It was the UEG that changed, not me. You still screwed up, bro, Romeo called from the bay. Piss off, Romeo, Mickey barked back. I quickly tapped the comm to keep Mickey's attention on the matter at hand. You want me to say something else to her? He asked. You already said plenty, Veronica said. You did a fine job, Mickey. Better than I hoped. Now we just have to wait for her response. And here's hoping it doesn't come in the form of a cloaked missile, I said. Soon the mayor's voice rang out over the comm. She sounded reluctant and wary. All right. We'll talk. Come on down. We'll set a beacon for where you should land. Veronica unmuted the comm. Thank you, Mayor Wells, she said. You won't regret this. I'd better not. Once Veronica cut the comm entirely, I spoke freely. It feels like a trap. Of course it's a trap, Veronica said. We're going to park the condor where they tell us to, and they're going to have enough ordnance trained on it to vaporize it. But it beats being blown away up here. I'm not sure I see how, I said. Dead is dead. Every step forward is progress. The further we go with the front, the less likely they are to obliterate us. If you say so. She's right, Mickey said. The closer you are to someone when you decide to kill them, the harder it is. The shaky tone in his voice told me I didn't want him to explain himself. I supposed I should have been glad that Mickey didn't kill me back on Telitza, rather than trying to take me hostage. But I somehow couldn't be all that thankful. Sometimes I wondered if a bullet would have been a lot easier. I would have died, but without knowing that Mickey had betrayed me. That one hurt. Still, I always prefer breathing to not. A beacon began flashing on the nav system, and Veronica angled the Condor toward it. The signal was coming from somewhere in the desert outskirts. What looked to be a good hike from the settlement. The sunlight cast across the sand made it look like blood, which didn't seem like a great sign. "You good with this?" I said to Veronica. "Maybe you should stay back with the ship." "I appreciate the concern," she said in as kind a tone as she could manage, considering I'd probably just insulted her. "But this is my mission, and I know more about what we're looking for and how we might be able to use it than anyone else. And we don't have the several hours I'd need to explain it all to you. We're going to need all the details in my head, not to mention my diplomatic skills. And I'll probably need you to pull my fat out of the fire at some point," I said. "To be fair, I wouldn't say that it's becoming a habit," she said. "Yet. But that did figure into my calculations. As I was just telling Locke this week, I only allow myself to be rescued by the best. Otherwise, I'd just do it myself." "Don't push your luck. I can only save so many people. And I don't want to be forced to make any hard choices." As we got closer to the hole in the wall, I started to see that the settlement we were heading for wasn't quite as small and amateur an operation as the name implied. It was situated around a trio of massive Forerunner towers, sitting right there in the lush and golden high plains, on the shore of a sprawling lake. The ashen-colored towers formed a triangle that enclosed the edges of a bay, on which sat dozens of small boats, mostly rigged for fishing and sailing. The people of Cassidy III had moved in, setting up their own homes in the ancient structures and in the area between them. I saw wires of all sorts strung about the place, along with some bits of human architecture slapped up against the original towers here and there. Houses, buildings, even high-hanging balconies. They looked something like shanties stacked on the sides of castles. From the air, the place seemed peaceful enough. We could see foot and vehicle traffic milling about in the morning sun. People going about their business, probably heading to school or work or whatever, and ignoring things like UNSC ships skating in from the stars. The batteries of weapons located along the perimeter of the settlement put the lie to that. There was also a 4-meter-tall enclosure about a half a click from the edge of the settlement that evidently protected the people inside from anything that lived on the planet, as long as it didn't burrow or fly, I suppose. The beacon guided us to a stony basin at the south end of the city. Not an airport or even a proper landing strip, just a wide stretch of dry land that featured nothing but red-hued ridges that seemed like they might have been mined a decade or so ago. The landing site was far removed from the settlement. I guess they didn't want to do any damage to their own property if they needed to blow us away. The basin was fully exposed to a pair of artillery batteries that tracked us as we flew in and landed. I climbed down from the weapons station and met Veronica as she slipped out of the cockpit. Gretchen was waiting there to take over. "Keep her tight and steady," Veronica said to her. "She's in good hands, Captain," Gretchen said. Then she turned to me. "You do me the same for Dutch." "You know I will." Dutch, Romeo, and Mickey were already waiting for me and Veronica by the ramp, which they hadn't lowered yet. Veronica stopped to speak to Sadie. "We may need Virgil's help soon. Just keep him out of trouble until then." "That's a lot easier said than done." Sadie gave the Huragok the hairy eyeball. "When my dad programmed the original Virgil, he made him just as stubborn and curious as I am. Unfortunately, Quick to Adjust has inherited both of those traits in spades. He's already remotely probing their networks for ways in." I patted Virgil on the side. "I'd expect nothing less from my favorite alien. But listen, concentrate on why this planet seems to be a blind spot for Cortana's forces. Do what you can to figure this place out. The quicker we can manage that, the faster we can grab what we need and then get out of here." "I will endeavor to solve this puzzle, Spartan Buck," he said through his tablet. I stuffed my helmet under my arm and motioned for Romeo and Dutch to do the same. Anything we can do to make ourselves look more human is a good thing. You could not bring the helmets at all, Mickey suggested. We're optimistic, Mickey, Dutch said. Not stupid.